The CGA Tour, a podcast unlike any other. Now your host, Calvin Alexander.
All right, well, welcome. We're now joined by Marshall Scott, the... what's your official title? Everything, all things for pistols firing?
Yeah, I write on tax documents and stuff. I write CEO because it sounds the coolest of anything.
Yeah.
President gets written on some things. I don't like president as much. I like CEO more. But yeah, writer is it seems like my main job.
I feel like CEO is one of those where that just sounds more new age,
yeah.
You know, versus president.
Yeah, I don't even, I guess I know what the CEO letters stand for, but there's like COO, there's a bunch of C's that I don't even know what the letters stand for.
I have learned that with my new job, what a lot of those letters stand for, and honestly, it just is, do whatever they say.
Yeah.
Yep. Keep going. Well, want to get you on here, of course, talk Oklahoma State basketball, football, a little baseball as well, too. But first and foremost, you know, both of us went to OSU together, graduated journalism school. You've carried on in the journalism path. I've taken a different one. But with that being said, one thing I've always admired that you're doing is you're asking the harder questions to anyone who goes to the, you know, basically at the school that you went to, right? I would think that'd be one of the harder things to do, being part of media, but also going, hey, you know what? I know this might ruffle some feathers, especially from people that I admire or, you know, do admire, used to, or currently still, you know, still looking up to. How do you handle that? How do you handle just kind of asking those tough questions to people who seem like gods to somebody like me, you know?
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's interesting in that, like, sometimes I don't even really know that I'm doing it. I think that's just kind of, you know, shout out to the journalism school, shout out to Ray Murray for kind of instilling that kind of stuff in you. But I think, you know, the Gundy situation that I ran into a couple years ago, I think that kind of, I think it was in a good way, it was a learning process for me. Not that I shouldn't have asked the question, but it kind of was good for me in that, okay, like this is real life. This isn't like you're not in journalism class anymore. So, yeah, I think that's just kind of where it starts was with Ray Murray. Shout out Ray Murray. And then from there, I don't know. It just feels like the right thing to do sometimes. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like lately since the Gundy thing, I've had a new perspective on it, and been kind of, I don't know, thinking about what my role is in this big thing, and I'm not sure that I found that totally yet.
Well, I'd say you're doing a heck of a stellar job, because when it comes down to it, and there's any Oklahoma State thing I want to know, I can look up and see something on Twitter from what looks like to be some type of animal combined with some Oklahoma State fan or some type of Oklahoma State kind of insignia or deal, or, you know, there's also me who could tweet out something. I'm kind of making fun of myself here, but when I want to know something, I'm like, okay, are there actually rumors? Is there actually any information to it? Whatever. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to go pistols firing. Like, right. That's it.
I appreciate that. That's what we want to be. That's what we want to be.
Of course. Well, I do want to ask you here. So with the new teams joining the Big 12, the football season schedule this year doesn't look to be too easy.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, we dodged some bullets, but we also got a lot of tough opponents here on the schedule too, with, you know, back-to-back Utah, K-State. Colorado at the end of the season just being an away game in Denver in November wouldn't be too much fun due to the weather, all type of stuff. But what do you expect out of the football team this year, kind of after seeing all this offseason type of stuff and spring practice being wrapped up?
Yeah, it's been interesting in that, especially the spring. Usually spring, you're like, okay, what position battle is happening? But with OSU returning so much, I think ESPN Analytics tweeted out something yesterday that they're like the second most returning production in the country behind like Iowa State, and Iowa State was all right last year, but they weren't on Oklahoma State's level aside from the game that they played, I guess. But so it was weird. The spring was weird in that we didn't really learn too much new. There wasn't too much new to learn. Kind of questions I have are like receiver depth, because they've got like four guys that have caught passes, and behind those guys, there's not a lot there. And if you've watched Oklahoma State football over the last couple of years, you know that four receivers probably isn't going to last throughout a season. So that's kind of something I'm interested in. The pass rush is something I'm sort of interested in. They're going to go down to some more four down fronts. That's kind of like a deeper level, like nerdy kind of thing. But so that's interesting. But yeah, just with the spring, with the newcomers in general, I think it's going to be an interesting year. Obviously, Utah, you'll know right away in terms of Big 12 schedule what Oklahoma State's like. You'd expect them to be pretty good just based on how they finished last year. But also, there are a lot of, you know, close games that maybe shouldn't have been as close. Even thinking like after, you know, there's obviously the South Alabama game that went horribly wrong. You lose to Iowa State. Even there were points against Arizona State that weren't totally comfortable. But even going past that, like the BYU game, the last game of the regular season, you know, you're kind of down big and have to come back and win in double overtime or triple overtime or whatever it was. And Ollie Gordon's got to run through nine guys to get in the end zone. And Trey Rucker's got to somehow strip a tight end and recover that fumble. So, you know, I think, you know, you see a lot of the Vegas projections and it's maybe lower than Oklahoma State fans think that they should be just based on the 10 wins that they got to last year. But I think maybe that's not that I'm saying that that's where the number should be. But maybe that's what Vegas is seeing, that the number that they played such close games, things along that nature, that maybe this will be close again. So, yeah, I don't know. I think we'll be, you know, you'll know instantly with Utah. You might know instantly with South Dakota State. Like if that's another struggle, you know, that might be kind of interesting. And then, you know, you get West Virginia, who I think is a pretty sneaky team this year. K-State, who you mentioned. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty fun year.
On the fun aspect of it, though, is this kind of going to be one of those years where, okay, hey, we have all the pieces. You know, you talk about everyone returning where, okay, it's Big 12 championship expectations at minimum, or is that kind of the maximum expectations we should have?
No, I think I think minimum in terms of expectations, I think it should be to get back there just based on, you know, you're returning Ollie Gordon, you're returning, I think, like six pretty ingrained starters on the offensive line. And then you bring in Isaiah Glass from Arizona State, who throughout the spring everybody spoke pretty highly of. You know, you've got Alan Bowman back, and you know there are people who are on the fence about Alan Bowman still, but he was good enough to win 10 games last year. So, I think expectations should be high. Just with Mike Gundy's track record of, you know, producing wins. I think fans' expectations should be high. Could there be room for a letdown? Maybe think back to, what was it, it was 2019 that Chuba went crazy, and then he came back for 2020, I think is how it went. And he was dealing with some injuries and maybe didn't necessarily have the season that he wanted. But I think there's maybe a little bit more fail safes than just Ollie Gordon. You know, they go get Trent Howland from Indiana, a big running back to, you know, just in case you think anything does go wrong with Ollie, you've got him there. You've got Brendan Presley, you've got Rashad Owens. I was so impressed with Dejon Stribling last year before he got hurt. So I think, you know, even past Ollie Gordon, which is, you know, the national people will see Ollie Gordon is this team. But I think even past that, I think there's room for optimism there. Could there be a letdown? Sure. That's college football. But yeah, I think expectations should be on the Big 12 championship level.
Well, when it comes down to it, do you think our weakness on offense is kind of, I mean, you're talking about Bowman kind of being, people are undecided. I'm not necessarily asking where you stand on him, mm-hmm. but, you know, always hearing about new quarterback recruits. Zane Flores was the hottest thing since sliced bread not too long ago, but now we've got another guy. And, you know, I mean, Rangel, I believe, is still on the roster, mm-hmm. et cetera. I think Gunner, at least, is still not transferred, but still in the portal. So, I mean, how's that all playing out?
Yeah, so Alan Bowman, I think, will be the ingrained guy just because that's kind of how Gundy rolls. It's always been... He's always valued experience, and it's hard to knock him for that just because of all the success that he's had. But then, yeah, I've heard a lot of Zane Flores hype, even through spring, even through, you know, like last year, just seeing him, he's bigger than he looks. You know, you see the long hair, and you think he kind of looks cool, but he's like a legit 6'4". I don't know what they list him at weight wise, but he's a pretty big dude. I was impressed with Garrett Rangel last year. I kind of thought he got the short end of the straw in the three quarterback rotation deal. I think he was like injured a week of practice, or he's sick or something like that. And then so like he missed out on some reps while they were still rotating quarterbacks. So I thought that, you know, he was right there with Bowman at least. I think the quarterback room is really deep. Gundy said during the early spring that Gunner's going to go play somewhere. That's not Oklahoma State is what it sounded like. So, but even with those three guys, and you mentioned the recruit, I don't know how to say his first name still. I've looked at the pronunciation guide and still don't know how to say it, but his last name's Smith. You know, he probably won't factor into things this year, but he could be a pretty good prospect. So I think that it'll be Alan Bowman's job to lose. I don't think he's going to lose it throughout the year. I know there's been a lot of hype about Zane, hype that I bought into also, but I just think with how big this year is in terms of you have everybody bringing back, throwing in a quarterback who would be playing his first snaps, I just don't know that's, you know, kind of the route that OSU would want to go. If it was a lighter year where maybe in thinking back to like last year, where there were kind of like a lot of unknowns. Ollie kind of broken out, but you know, that West Virginia game in the rain 2 years ago, he'd kind of broken out, but the team was going through a lot of transitions. Like I think that would maybe be a time for a young quarterback to kind of step in. But with all the expectations this team has, I think you want to go steady with Alan Bowman.
Yeah. I mean, I like watching Alan Bowman play a lot. He does remind me just from his moving ability in the pocket, like Brandon Wheaton, but of course he's just not, not the same guy. I mean, granted, if he was, it would be a different spot. You did talk about Stribling earlier, though. Is there, I mean, I'm a big Rashad Owens fan myself here, but then again, he's a late bloomer, I would say. He's been with the team for several years. Are there other guys besides kind of, you know, I mean, Presley, Stribling, him that we should know about?
Well, there's Talon Shetron, who, if he can stay healthy, I think he's got it. He was such a highly touted recruit, was committed to Oklahoma, flips his commitment to Oklahoma State, which was a big deal back when it happened. He just needs to stay healthy. That's kind of his thing right now, is needing to stay healthy. And aside from that, it's going to be guys that, you know, the normal fan might not know about. And honestly, even me, who's a little more ingrained in this kind of thing, is kind of just waiting to see. Is it like a Tyke Andrews, the former Enid guy? Jalen Pope, I've heard his name. Cameron Hurd. So the kind of that class of receivers who I think they were all true freshmen last year. I imagine one or two of them is going to have to step up this year. Which one it's going to be, I'm not quite sure yet.
Yeah, I'm real curious to see how we do on the offense side of the ball and what kind of changes, especially if we stick to kind of the running game plan. It seemed like we liked a lot last year, or if we change it at all. Have you seen anything kind of spring practices that would suggest, hey, maybe we are going to get back to the Mason Rudolph, to James Washington, air raiding it out, or do you think we stick with Ollie?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go that far in that direction to the Rudolph days, as much as, you know, that's when we were in school and it was so much fun to watch. But yeah, I think it's going to be a heavy dose of Ollie. Gundy's kind of said that he wants to lighten Ollie's load up a little bit. And that was, he said similar things with Chuba when Chuba was really getting, and I think even going back to Justice Hill, obviously Ollie's bigger than those guys and can, you know, hypothetically carry a little bit more, but you saw last year, there were times where he'd have to limp off the field and he'd get on the bike and he'd, you know, do that for 5 minutes and then run back on the field. So, you know, he's mentioned, you know, lighting the load a little bit. So maybe that gets a little bit more room for Brandon Presley, for Dejon Stribling and Alan Bowman. But yeah, I think for the most part, I think offensively things are going to be pretty similar to what they were last year.
Well, sounds great. What did you think about on the defensive side of the ball, Nardos? And I know he's still kind of the co-defensive with, you know, as well with DeForest there.
Yeah, it's with Joe Bob Clements.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I think Nardo is the DC, and I think they list Joe Bob as co-DC. I don't know that it's a full co. I don't know how they do that, but yeah. It was an interesting first year, just in that, A, you're implementing a new system, you know, 3-3-5, that's something that Oklahoma State hadn't done a ton of. And then B, the back end was so young. You had Kendall Daniels back there, but then aside from that, it was a lot of young guys. Trey Rucker, obviously, he had some experience as well, and Corey Black. But there were so many young safeties that were, you know, kind of just getting thrown into the fire and being asked to figure it out. At that same time, you're transitioning Colin Oliver to linebacker. So, as up and down, I think, as things were defensively, I don't know that you could fully pin that on Nardo just with all the transition that was kind of happening there. But yeah, they've talked a lot about, you know, more four down fronts, and it seems like Colin Oliver is going to start playing closer to the line of scrimmage like he was during his freshman year, whenever he was so, you know, good. And you think back to the Caleb Williams sack and Bedlam and things like that. And then it seems like Kendall Daniels, and yeah, I think he's listed at 6'4", 240 right now. It sounds like he's going to be moving a little bit closer. So, you know, it's been debated a little bit whether that actually means linebacker or whether, you know, they're just kind of shifting things. Defense is so fluid these days that it's hard to totally tell. But yeah, it seems like Colin Oliver's going to be stepping closer. You know, maybe Kendall Daniels kind of fills in a linebacker-ish kind of role. And then obviously you got Nick Martin from last year, who is incredible. So yeah, I think defensively it's going to be a step forward if they can find a way to get pressure on quarterbacks, which didn't help with their, you know, young defensive secondary last year, that they also weren't getting pressure on quarterbacks and forcing, you know, those guys were standing back there and being able to pick those young guys apart. So yeah, I think this defense should take a step forward in year two. It's probably going to look a little bit different than maybe even Nardo's used to, but I think just with the pieces they have, it'll be a more successful season defensively.
Yeah, I gotta say, I was skeptical at first, but then Nardo seemed to kind of round out the year at least well enough for us to get 10 wins, which is all I care about. And I don't think there's any way we were beating Quinn Ewers in Texas at the time.
Yeah, that game seemed like a formality rolling in just with all the momentum that Texas had, with the athletes they had. Oklahoma State was a little banged up. Ollie didn't touch the ball a ton in that game in general. So yeah, that game is, because I was in the building for the 21 game against Baylor, and you know, going into that game, the feeling was like Oklahoma State's going to win this thing, and it was a totally different feeling walking into AT&T Stadium this past year. It just didn't feel realistic with where Oklahoma State was and with the athletes that Texas had. And usually, you know, Gundy's been really good against Texas, but, you know, that Texas team last year was a little bit different than they had been in the past.
It was nice that at least they challenged Washington in the, you know, in the cultural playoffs. So it wasn't like, oh, they just got their, you know, kind of got blown out or something. And it was, how do we judge this OSU team? So it was nice that they put up a fight there. When it comes to kind of the maximum expectations, though, do you think, hey, you know what, with the new team playoff, we could be hosting a game? Do you think the Big 12 kind of has, you know, a couple other teams in it as well?
Yeah, so I think, I haven't like dove too deeply, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Big 12 gets two teams in, you know, and with that, you'd think Oklahoma State is in the running there. Just, you know, we talked about the expectations they should have. So I think, you know, I think the expectation is to, you know, is to, if the expectation is to win the Big 12, then the expectation at this point with how the playoff is set up is to make the college football playoff. So, yeah, it as far as hosting and stuff, it's so new and foreign to me that I haven't thought too much about it. And honestly, talking to the guys, they kind of seemed to be more focused on the Big 12 title. But at this point, literally making like winning a Big 12 title would mean you're in the playoffs. So I think that's a fairly real expectation as well.
Well, it's always great to hear. You know, would love to get back to that 2011, you know, and add another name, at least on the side of BPS. When it comes to kind of the whole offseason changes that Oklahoma State's gone through athletic wise, right? New wrestling head coach, new basketball head coach. Which do you think makes the biggest change for OSU going, like for either team going forward on how good they could be?
Yeah, I think, you know, I didn't know, admittedly, a ton about David Taylor. My wrestling knowledge, I feel like I'm more knowledgeable than the average Oklahoma State, you know, casual football watcher, things like that. But my wrestling knowledge is very confined to Oklahoma State. So David Taylor being a Penn State guy and things like that, I honestly didn't know a ton about him. I'd heard of Magic Man before and things like that. But then just the fallout and watching, you know, I've been listening to podcasts and watching videos in, you know, in the wrestling world, this is a huge deal that they've got David Taylor on staff here. And they're talking about, you know, the future and recruits are really going to want to come, you know, wrestle here. And they're talking about the, you know, money that's being thrown around with, you know, the Paycom CEO and stuff getting involved and things like that. So I think long term, you know, this David Taylor hire, if it goes well, which many people expect that it will, I think this is kind of game changing in the world of college wrestling, which, you know, it kind of needed to shake up with how dominant Penn State's been. At the same time, I love the Steve Lutz hire. You know, getting a guy, we talked about, you know, there's Darian DeVries, the former Drake coach now at West Virginia, Danny Sprinkle, he goes to Washington. And Steve Lutz, and you kind of, if you kind of just blind resumed them, they were all fairly similar, but more people were just talking about DeVries and Sprinkle like right off the rip, so they kind of got more of the pub. But if you kind of blind resumed them all, they were all very similar. And then on top of that, Lutz has more ties to Texas, which is obviously a ginormous recruiting ground for Oklahoma State. So I think that might have worked out really perfectly for Oklahoma State. It seems like a great coach. You know, we don't know a ton about him yet. I've only met with him once, but it seems like a great coach, has been a head coach for three seasons and made the tournament all three of those seasons. So, you know, that's enough for me. He's still got some roster work to do. As we're taping this, I think he's got four scholarships left, doesn't have a big man yet. So like, you know, everything as far as the short term is a little TBD, but in the long term, I think this was another good hire from Jad Weiberg.
Yeah. Well, on the transfer front there for basketball, which of the transfers do you think were you most impressed by, or do you like the most kind of fitting in for the team? And how do you think it gels with the guys who are still on the roster?
Yeah. So I the Devontae Davis story is just cool, 'cause he was committed to Oklahoma State. And then he decommits, like the way I remember, which has been a while. It was somewhat out of nowhere, but then that was kind of the tea leaves that, hey, Cade Cunningham is coming here, because they played the same position. So that's just kind of a cool story that, you know, he was committed to OSU for a long time, ends up going to Arkansas and finds his way back to Stillwater. That's just a fun story. I kind of really like Marcellus Avery. I think he goes by Chi-Chi from UCF. You know, long, I think he's 6'7", can shoot threes. That's, for me, that's all I ask for in basketball players is length and shooting ability. So I think that's good. I think Robert Jennings, Texas Tech transfer, underrated. I think you look, I think he averaged like 4.6 points a game, which is nothing, you know, crazy. But menace on the offensive glass. He's like, if they had to play right now, he would play the center, which is probably not ideal. But the fact that you've got a guy who can move like he does and is able to, you know, play in the front court like that. I think that with Steve Lutz's style of go, go, go. I think that fits in well. Arturo Dean, the Florida International point guard, led the country in steals last year. And you talk about Steve Lutz's tempo that starts on the defensive end and getting the ball and going. So I think you can see the through lines for everybody that he's grabbed so far of like, okay, this is why he thinks that this is going to fit here. So I don't have any complaints about those guys right now. As far as how they fit with guys on the roster, I think right now I wrote something yesterday that you know, they kind of team needs at this point. Size was one of them, as we've already discussed, and kind of scoring is another. There are guys who can score, but like they haven't necessarily done it at this level. So that's just kind of interesting. So you might be asking a ton of Bryce Thompson, who I think gets way too much hate from the Oklahoma State fan base. You know, Bryce has stepped on a campus and done nothing but average double figures in scoring. So I'm a big Bryce Thompson guy, but you know, with the current roster setup, I think that they might be asking a ton of him. Then you're Jamyron Keller and Connor Dow. Connor Dow, you're just looking for more development. Kind of an unfair situation for those guys to be having to play so much. Jamyron obviously probably shined a little bit more than Connor Dow. I don't think that's unfair to say. But you know, Jamyron, you're looking for that step forward in terms of, you know, defense, in terms of playmaking ability, in terms of scoring, if you know, that's what this team's going to need. And then Connor Dow, you're just looking for another year of development. You know, I think Connor's ceiling is very high. He's got length. He's athletic. You think of, you know, white kids on recent Oklahoma State teams, and you think, oh, this kid's a shooter. Connor is that, but he's also got much more athleticism than a Thomas DeZoguer or a Phil Forte or things like that. So I think his ceiling's really high. It's just about development. But yeah, I think with his current setup, they're going to be asking a lot of Bryce Thompson, which I'm excited about, but I know that some Oklahoma State fans might not be.
Yeah, why do you think Bryce gets kind of that unfair blame? Is it because he was a former five-star who originally committed to OSU but then decommits and goes to Kansas? Or is there just kind of the – it seems like to me at least he's underwhelming in his performances. He you know, doesn't do always the best job in every single game, but that's a lot to ask for, especially given the team he's had to play with.
Yeah, I think it is all on the star rating because, you know, somebody decided that he has a 17- or 18-year-old was a five-star recruit, was a McDonald's All-American. So then he's got these expectations of, you know, why isn't he playing like Cade Cunningham? Well, Cade Cunningham was a different gravy right there. So I think that's where it starts. And that's where Mike Boynton has talked a lot about with Bryce and kind of like the scrutiny that he's under is that, you know, he's got so much outside noise and it's not even his doing really that kind of surrounds him that the expectations for Bryce were just, you know, crazy, crazy high. So I think that's where it comes from. But if you just kind of look in a vacuum of what Bryce Thompson has done, he's going to, you know, he's already 1,000-point scorer in his career. But some of those points came at Kansas, obviously. But he's going to be 1,000-point scorer just in OSU. I think I did the math on, like, if he's, you know, averages about where he should. I forgot what number, but he's going to be in, like, the top 20 all-time scorers in program history. So, like, and he's, you know, an Oklahoma kid, does everything right. Kind of sounds like Mike Gundy at this point. But I think that for all those reasons that he should be really celebrated in the Oklahoma State fan base.
Well, hopefully we can get him back as a future coach unless he, you know, goes and spends several years in Europe or even if after he does that or whatever. With that being said, do you think there's any current NBA kind of draft prospects we have on the basketball roster? And I mean, it's tough for me to think that we do, honestly, just given last year and how many guys left. And I mean, Garrison's the guy who comes immediately to mind is possibly having that NBA type of deal. But he went to Kentucky, so yeah, he should.
Yeah, I think, you know, as far as last year's team, I think, you know, Brandon Garrison, I think that he's got an NBA ceiling. I think Eric Daly probably has an NBA ceiling, just, you know, being 6'8 and kind of doing all the things that he's able to do. As far as this current group, you know, it's a lot about fit and situation for some of these guys. You think of like Lindy Waters, you would have never thought, you know, that he's, you know, not only on an NBA roster, but on the one seed, like that. It's just kind of crazy that his, ability, he found out that he just needs to shoot the crap out of the ball. And that's, you know, what he does when he gets in there. So, I think that Bryce could, you know, if the fit was right, I think Bryce could, you know, be that type of player. I wouldn't count out a Jamyron Keller type. Not that he would have I don't know that he's totally high, you know, NBA ceiling, but just with kind of the stuff that he's able to do, he's kind of got that bulldog mentality. I think that plays a big part in it. But yeah, without seeing the transfers live, really, I have no clue on those guys.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the Robert Jennings one and the Arturo Dean are the two that I know more about as transfers. I haven't really dug into the rest of them, but I'm curious to see how they gel. kind of as you're getting as well.
Yeah, it's in, like I said, you kind of can see kind of the through line that Steve Lutz is kind of putting here. And it's an emphasis on defense. It's an emphasis on, you know, kind of grit almost. That's kind of an overused word in basketball, I think. But I think that, you know, the group that he has right now is kind of in that. So you can see the line. Just for the love of God, somebody sign a guy that's at least 6'9".
Seems like since Mitchell Solomon's been on the roster, we've needed that. We've needed that one other guy. I mean, Cisse was kind of, but yeah, man, it's just was such a hit and miss.
Caleb Boone had his ups too. His highs were incredibly high. His lows were incredibly low. That was kind of the Caleb Boone experience. I think I loved every minute of it, but it was also, imagine, even for my boy, incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, it had to be for sure. I'm still curious what at the end of the day happened there, because it seemed like he left UNLV and went to go play with Keelan, and that was kind of a good story at the end of the day. But then again, he was checked out in those NIT games. At least it looked like that on TV, I'll say.
Yeah, him and Keelan both kind of had their ups and downs with the program. Obviously, being Tulsa kids, they were fan favorites. But yeah, there were some peaks and valleys there.
For sure. Well, on the pro side, I do want to ask you about football. Besides Ollie, is there another guy? Hey, this guy could be NFL kind of talent, NFL kind of ready after a year.
I think if Kendall Daniels is such an in-betweener right now, we mentioned him, you know, is he safety, is he a linebacker? I think if they can figure that out, he is an NFL guy. I think, you know, it's kind of like, who was it, Isaiah Simmons, the Clemson guy from a couple years ago? They weren't really sure what to do with him. He was, you know, obviously an extreme example. I think he's like a top 10 pick or something. But like, I think if they can just kind of figure out his role, I think he's an NFL type talent. I think Dijon Stribling is an NFL talent. Just he's got the size. His footwork seemed really good. And this is after four games of watching him. So like, maybe don't hold me too hard to that. Outside of that, I love Nick Martin. He's going to, you know, get clowned on. I don't know if clowned on is the right word. There are going to be questions brought up about his size for a linebacker at the NFL level. But he is just the toughest dude that I think I've ever covered. It seems like I'd love for Brendan Presley to get a shot. You know, with Presley, his side to side speed is elite. I think maybe what some teams will caution on is his straight line speed. With that size, you know, you can be small and a receiver in the NFL, but you've got to, you know, have burners. So I think given the right situation, given, you know, just kind of the advancement of the modern game of football, I think Brendan Presley's got a shot. Outside of that, I think that's all I've got on my mind right now. But I'm sure there's, you know, there's going to be guys that make camps and get all that good stuff. Justin Kirkland, you could clog up the middle. Same with Colin Clay. So there'll be guys that have their shots for sure.
Yeah, just it's one of those years where, of course, we have this many returning starters. We're not going to get guys drafted. But every year that goes by that we have no draft picks, it just seems like, okay, something weird happened. You know, I mean, I was glad to see, you know, Leon Johnson, several others got at least signed to practice squads and get their fair share and get their trial in the NFL level too.
Yeah, it's kind of the OSU conundrum in that, you know, people want Mike Gundy to recruit better. People want more NFL players from Oklahoma State. But at the same time, it's like, do you want to sacrifice that for all the winning that Mike Gundy's been able to do? Like this is how Mike Gundy wins. So I think that's a point of inflection in the Oklahoma State fan base. I think most fans of most other programs would say, give me the winning every day of the week. So I don't know that it's too justified for Oklahoma State fans to be too worried about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I got to say, when I think about, you know, if you're an Iowa State fan, right, would you rather be an Iowa State fan or an Oklahoma State fan for the past 10 years in football? And I think there's no question about it. You'd rather be an Oklahoma State fan. And really, besides OU in the Big 12, you'd rather be an Oklahoma State fan over the past 10. It just is, you know, both of us as OSU fans, I'm sure it just is kind of annoying after a while. It's like, all right, well, let's win a Big 12 championship. You know, we haven't done that in the past 10 years, but it seems like just, you know, other schools have. OU's won a handful of them, Texas, of course, too, and they're leaving. So what can we do in the new Big 12? With that being said, the kind of the middle of Big 12, there's just the NIL question of like, okay, what's going on behind the scenes? Why are we not able to just pay for guys, get better guys on roster? Do you think that, you know, really whatever sport, but do you think that's more of a culture standpoint or just kind of a, hey, we are a state school, it's an ag school, that's, you know, town of, you know, 20,000-30,000 people when school's not in session, et cetera?
I think it's, I don't know. It's tough to say. I think it's also new that, and then I'm so focused on Oklahoma State that my horizons maybe aren't, like, kind of like with wrestling, like I'm not you know, what is Arkansas doing in Iowa? I don't really know. I have no idea. So I think, I don't know. I think that Mike Gundy has taken steps to, you know, I think initially he was kind of stubborn to the fact of change. I think he's embraced it to this point. He's embraced the portal, and, you know, overall that seems like it's been a plus for the program. At the same time, as far as bringing transfer people in this year, they didn't need a ton. So it's tough to totally say, you know, what that I'm interested in next year when you're down, you know, your starting quarterback, presumed starting quarterback, Alan Bowman, Ollie Gordon probably going to the NFL draft. I don't know, you know, why he wouldn't. Brandon Presley's out of eligibility. I think Stribling's out of eligibility. Rashad Owens out of eligibility. So I think next year, kind of seeing how they interact with the portal, seeing what type of guys that they could, you know, lure to Oklahoma State, I think that's kind of going to be the big jumping off point of, okay, here's where OSU is in the NIL world. As far as basketball goes, that was kind of like a chicken and the egg scenario. Obviously, Mike Boynton made comments that, you know, ruffled some feathers, but I think looking back at it, I think past this, I think we'll be overall Mike Boynton saying what he said. And if you didn't hear, he's, you know, was just essentially saying that they're near the bottom in the Big 12 of basketball NIL spending. I think him saying that and finding, you know, and putting it out there, I think in the long term, that's going to be a positive for Oklahoma State, just because it's like, oh, like this is how the game is played nowadays. You know, it ruffled some people's feathers initially, because it's like, well, you're not winning basketball games. Why am I going to donate money? And it kind of becomes a chicken and egg scenario. But as far as the future and kind of raising awareness that hey, this is how this goes now, I think overall that'll be a kind of net positive.
Yeah, I do think Boynton was telling the future a little bit when it comes down to, okay, Calipari asked Kentucky if they wanted to match the Arkansas offer, and Kentucky goes, I think we're good. You know, I mean, granted, losing the first round when you're Kentucky is different than losing the first round when you're, you know, BYU, for example, or Oklahoma State, et cetera. I'm not comparing to BYU, but just saying Kentucky's just a whole different world there.
Yeah.
When it comes down to Boynton saying that, I was just a big pro, because it's like, hey, you know what? We can see how all of it's done, and now he's right. I mean, Calipari goes to Arkansas. I don't think he's going to Arkansas before the NIL exists, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, and you kind of look at the numbers of, I think he said there were like two or three teams that are spending $2 million, you know, another five or six that are above $1 million, and they were working at around the 500,000 area. And that's just, you know, I'm not a business mogul by any means, but I imagine if you have that much more resources, double, triple, quadruple the resources, things are probably going to work out a little better for you. And at the same time, though, you wonder, you know, if Mike Boynton was winning more basketball games, could Oklahoma State have done that? Maybe. I don't know. So that's just kind of, like I said, it kind of turned into a chicken and egg scenario in terms of, you know, basketball spending and where the program was at. But maybe with this refresh start with Steve Lutz coming in, maybe, you know, the slate's wiped clean and we can kind of go from there.
Yeah, I got to say, going back to the kind of the David Taylor hire in wrestling for a second, the biggest thing for me is that I've noticed that there's just a bunch more Oklahoma State engagement on social media from it, and it seems like really just taken off on that. Why do you think this is such a big deal from what you've been able to learn about kind of David Taylor coming over from Penn State? And I know Coleman Scott was kind of the guy who was going to be the wrestling coach, but then, you know, it's not at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But why is this such a big deal getting David Taylor? What, I mean, besides his just kind of accolades, it doesn't seem like he's been a coach before, right?
Yeah. So he hasn't been a traditional college coach at this point. He started wrestling is like a lifestyle. Like wrestling is so, like, the grassroots of wrestling is important. He started a training center for youth called M2 up in State College. And then that kind of bleeds into, you know, college careers. And then post that, there's what's called RTCs, which is where Dayton, like Dayton Fix is going to work. It's going to wrestle for the Cowboy RTC moving forward. And so, but you need a strong, in a lot of terms, strong RTC means strong college program. Strong grassroots means strong college program. So it's all kind of its own ecosystem. You know, you see that, like, the Stillwater High wrestling program has really taken off seemingly as of late. Maybe it's been, you know, this good all the time, but that's because a lot of kids are literally moving, like, and their families are moving to Stillwater because they want to then go to Oklahoma State. So it's like wrestling is almost its own beast in the sports world. So I think. Him coming in, it seemed like a lot of what was important to him in terms of taking this job was to make sure that he was going to have the resources that you know, the RTC is going to, you know, strengthen and things like that, and continuing to grow, you know, youth wrestling in Oklahoma. So all that is very important. And then as far as him being such a big hire, it's they've been talking about it like it'd be like if Oklahoma State, the football job was open. And, you know, you mentioned Coleman Scott. It'd be like if Brandon Whedon was the associate head coach. But then you could also hire like Tom Brady. And it's like, OK, well, I love you, Brandon Whedon, but this is Tom Brady.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of that's kind of the vibe anyways that I've gotten. Like I've said, I'm not a crazy huge wrestling guy, but, you know, essentially one of the all time greats who's, you know, just finished up, literally just finished up his. You know, not professional wrestling career, because it's, you know, WWE, but his Olympic wrestling career is starting, you know, with one of the most historic programs of all time. So I think that's kind of that's what I've learned, I guess, in the days following, of kind of how tide shifting this can be. And he was you know, kind of a key piece to Penn State's dynasty. He was one of the first, you know, high level recruits that Cale Sanderson got there. He wins two individual national titles. So it just seems to me like it's going to kind of shift and turn maybe college wrestling on its head a little bit.
I mean, sounds awesome.
Yeah.
That's the main thing I'm taking away. And props to all the media stuff that Oklahoma State's doing, everything like that. Yeah. But without giving them too much credit here, that's the question. So I think you answered real well of, okay, how is this guy relevant to wrestling?
Yeah.
I mean, who is he? And you can look at all the accolades. Okay, he's won all these awards. But then again, it does seem like I'm kind of almost, hey, we're never doing anything bad, right? So, like, it seems like every single football, yeah. You know, every single year in football, for example, there's the equestrian team comes out, the track team comes out, the wrestling team comes out, and they've all won stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible as an Oklahoma State fan that I try not to take for granted how every single team seems to be top 20 in the country mm-hmm. at every single thing. But, of course, I'm building up here to kind of the spring sports here in baseball and softball. You know, softball looks incredible. Did beat OU at OU. Mm-hmm. So can always say, hey, props on that. Big 12 tournament didn't go the way we wanted. Didn't go last year's way, I guess.
Yep.
And didn't win it. But what do you think between baseball and softball? Who do you think has kind of I know softball is fifth in the country and hosting a regional this weekend, but who do you think can go farther, you know, down in the postseason road?
Yeah, I think at this point I would still say softball, but baseball's definitely putting some things together here as of late. The softball team, I just wasn't sure. They'd lost so many pieces, kind of unlike the football team this year. They'd lost so many pieces from last year. You think of your Cheyenne Factors, your Kylie Naomi's, names that have, you know, been on all of those World Series rosters, that it's like, okay, this is kind of a reset here. They've got two freshmen starting in the infield. They got Talon Edwards starting at third base, who's a sophomore who enrolled early, so she should be a freshman. You know, you lose Kelly Maxwell, and, you know, Lexi Kilfoy is now stepping into the ace role, even though she apparently hates the word ace, but that's unfortunately, Lexi, that's what you are.
She was what, Big 12 pitcher of the year?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So
I think you can be called ace and be okay with it, you know?
Yeah. So, but it's all just kind of come together. Carly Godwin, a freshman, plays first base, is elite. The transfers they brought in, Jillian Poolyard, I think is how it's pronounced. Caroline Wong, catcher, they've been outstanding. So it's kind of, it seems like Kenny's just kind of kept it rolling. I think they went into the last year's regional having lost like 11 of 13 or something like that. So you mentioned the Big 12 tournament not going maybe the way they wanted to. It, you know, it's compared to last year, they're doing fine right now. With the regional, it's kind of be tough, you know, having an SEC school and the Big Ten tournament champion in your regional. It's like, oh, that's a little rough. But I think, you know, things are set up for Oklahoma State to make another trip to Oklahoma City in the World Series. The baseball team has, you know, they've dealt with a lot of weird injuries throughout the year. It seemed like early they're kind of tinkering with what to do with the pitching staff a little bit. They've locked things in. Brian Holiday's been outstanding, a JUCO transfer.
Any relation to the other Holidays?
No relation. Holiday. You know, Robert Kranz, I asked the guys during their media day back in February, March, whatever it was. I was like, who's a guy on the roster that people don't know about right now that they are going to know about? And they all kind of collectively agree that it was Robert Kranz, who's been this relief pitcher for him, and he's been nails. And then they've been crushing the baseball. They've been hitting so many home runs. A couple nights ago, I did a little blurb where they've hit 90 plus home runs the last 3 years. They'd only done that once before that, between 2000 and whenever that cutoff was, 2021 or 2022 or whatever it was. So Josh Holliday said, like, yeah, we put a little bit more emphasis in, you know, we're not trying to steal 100 bases. We're trying to hit 100 home runs. So it's an exciting, you know, brand of baseball to watch. And they've got the guys to do it. Nolan Schubert is elite. He's going to be, an MLB player someday. Carson Bench is just kind of ridiculous. He's just like, if his listed position should just be baseball player. He pitches, he plays right field. I think I've seen him play first a handful of times, maybe last year. He doesn't look like he's going to crush baseballs, but he also crushes baseballs. They've been getting a little healthier. Tyler Wolfert came back this past week. Aiden Miola's back. So I think that, in kind of classic Josh Holliday fashion, this team is ramping up at just the right time. Now it's a matter of, kind of getting over that hump of regional disappointment the past couple of years.
Yeah, I got to say, it's a lot of fun to watch baseball games now. Mm-hmm. I mean, LAP versus Obrate, there's just no comparison. Yeah. And I'm hoping softball stadium kind of goes that direction. I know the softball stadium isn't that old to begin with, but then again, it has room for improvement, room for expansion, more or yeah. less, what I'd say, right?
And with as good as the softball team is nowadays, it's just too small. That's just how it is. They make it a great time. Obviously, the deck's out in the outfield and things like that, and they put, the temporary bleachers up out and right. That it's still a fun experience. But I was down at Love's Field, Oklahoma's new stadium, and it's outstanding. It's a beautiful, beautiful stadium. And that's, with all the winning that Kenny Gajewski and those girls have done, they deserve something similar.
Yeah. Have you heard anything at all about kind of I know Oklahoma State was going to build like the health and wellness center and just do a bunch of all the mm-hmm. renovations. It was like $300 million plus project, but have you heard any updates on that recently at all? I mean, that's something I haven't heard about.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard a ton about that either. I think it seems like wrestling's kind of taking a step forwards into getting, them a facility. I think it's supposed to be out in that parking lot that's next to GIA. I think that's like at least whenever the vision plan came out, I think that's where it was. So I think maybe wrestling's the closest, just with, you kind of mentioned, David Taylor and the kind of resources that he wanted to make sure that he had coming into that. That's where I would say it's kind of in the lead right now. But yeah, it's been what a year and some change, and nothing too much has moved on that front. But yeah, you would think, if softball kind of just keeps winning, if they keep showing up at the door, at some point somebody will let them in. But I don't have the money so it's hard for me to like complain, like softball deserves a stadium. I'm not going to give the $4 million. It's more than $4 million. I'm not going to give up the millions and millions of dollars for it because I don't have it. So
yeah, it's always one of the things where I kind of feel bad about asking about NIL questions because mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, well, I'm not asking from this of, hey, I just gave money because I definitely did not.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the promotion that I think you guys did, though, with OSU
yeah.
Athletics of basically, entering the raffle for tickets, all type of stuff. Was that who came up with that idea, I guess? How did that come together?
Keontae Roberts just kind of cold called me one day. And I don't know if you ever talked to Keontae, but he can talk. He's got the gift of the gab. So he sold me pretty instantly on it. It was a raffle. I think it's definitely ended now. They just announced the winners. But I think they're kind of coming up with more creative ideas to get the fan base involved, just because NIL is such a new thing. And the people who could donate for it are generally older people because they've got, they've got the money. But you have to find a way to help the older generation understand, hey, this is how college athletics is played now. Can you help with this? So I think Post with Purpose has been taking steps forward in terms of, engagement, in terms of, finding the right avenues to kind of find a way to raise money. I think it's headed in the right direction. Is it going maybe slower than some people hope? Yeah, probably. But like I said, I'm not going to donate the millions of dollars that it takes to do this because I don't have it. So once they figure that out, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I got to say, I want to give you a second just to kind of tell Oklahoma State fans of what they need to know, what's the coolest, deal. And I know we've ran through a list of topics, but my biggest frustration with Oklahoma State athletics is that I see how many wins certain teams are putting up against, against top 10 teams in the country or ranked opponents in football. And I see how many wins we have over the past 20 years and just all these different stats Oklahoma State's pretty darn close to the top of. And I know there's been some heartbreaking losses, but that happens with every single school. I mean, I'm sure you got family members who are not only fans of OSU, and we kind of know how it goes. I've got several family members who are big Colorado or UCLA or whatever other fans who are like, hey, we actually killed to have OSU's record over the past, whatever years, basically against, and except for in basketball when it comes to UCLA, it's every other sport.
Yeah. You think of heartbreaks, but it's almost better to care. Literally every Oklahoma State team gives you a sense of, I care about this. So yeah, I think Oklahoma State's in a good spot in that. You know, even basketball, they haven't had great seasons lately. But like, think of the Cade Cunningham year. You think of some runs that those Mike Boynton teams went on, and you're like, okay, I'm invested again. I think that's a good place for any athletic department to be, just to have people that care about it. And for Oklahoma State, it's literally every sport. You know, the women's tennis loss the other day, that was heartbreaking and it's like, why does this entire fan base care about women's tennis? Not that we should or shouldn't, but it's like not a whole lot of people would have cared had their women's tennis team lost a match. But that was a huge blow just because of all the expectations that they had. And it's like, you know, they've got investment in women's tennis. They've got investment in baseball and softball and wrestling and basketball, obviously in football. So, yeah, I think as far as the fan base aspect of it goes, I think it would, you know, it's tough to find a more collective group of good teams in Oklahoma State.
Yeah, because I definitely get wanting to be better. I mean, that's something we're all going to yearn for, all going to want. And, of course, if we were winning basketball championships or in contention for basketball championships every year in football, not just in contention for Big 12, but national championships, I doubt you and I'd be sitting here going, so what's the deal with NIL? Yeah, you know, we'd be going like, all right, cool. Like, I wonder what Gundy's thinking this year. Or, you know, we'd have different, you know, we've got a Heisman Trophy kind of guy on the roster. And this year we do, actually. But with that being said, what would you, as just somebody who's in and out of Oklahoma State athletics every single day, just kind of like want every OSU fan to know, is there, hey, you know what, we've got a guy here who's just not as well valued, is the golf team going to go out and win, you know, the whole entire thing every single year for the next 5 years? Or, hey, you know what, end of the day, it comes down to, hey, you know what, like, football is the sport we should be doing the best at year over year, or maybe even all of the above.
Yeah, so I'm a basketball guy, so I think just in general, I care more about the basketball pieces I write, about the things like that. But I think there's a lot of truth in football is the kind of heartbeat of everything, and it kind of trickles down from there. As far as, you know, NIL goes and getting involved in that, an issue I've kind of had with NIL is that it was like, okay, now the players are getting a piece of the pie. But in reality, it kind of seems like, and maybe I'm off on this, it kind of seems like they just are like trying to create a whole new pie and be like, okay, this is for the players. We're still keeping all of this, but now don't, you know, on top of coming up here every weekend, on top of the tickets you're buying, also donate to the NIL collective. So I have a tough time saying to people, you know, if you want to get involved, you want your team to do well, you know, donate to Post with a Purpose, say that you should. And if you can, you should. And if that's, you know, something that you're interested in, definitely do it. But I have a tough time when people ask me about it saying, okay, well, you know, you're already paying for tickets, you're already doing this, you're already doing that. So yeah, sorry. I think if you want to see your team do better, NIL's at this point the way that it's going to have to be. But at the same time, like I've been saying, I'm not going to tell people what to do with their money.
Yeah, I do think it becomes a tough part when it's like, hey, you were doing all this, you were spending XY dollars. Now divert your 401k to, you know, Post the Purpose or do whatever you can to donate money towards it, because now we need even more money, you know, in some form or fashion, right? But I don't think it's necessarily just wrong, but yeah. I wish there was, okay, we're selling jerseys in the student union, and every single Oklahoma State football jersey now, instead of all going to the athletic department, it all gets divvied up. But that's just not how, then you got to charge more for it, right? Yeah. You just got to increase the amounts no matter what. I know also, I'm just on a completely other thing, we're both big Thunder fans. Absolutely. Thunder after game 4 last night, finally tied it up.
Ooh,
got game 5 coming up on Wednesday, whenever you listen to this, recording on Tuesday, just the day before. But what have you been thinking about kind of the foul calls? I'll leave it at that.
So I haven't put, that's just kind of the NBA nowadays. I think maybe it's the journalist in me, to where I can't care so much that I'm ticked off about Luka flopping or things like that. It's just basketball these days is a guard driving the lane, throwing his head back, and, you know, hoping somebody blows a whistle. And I think that's just kind of how it is. Is Luka overdoing it? Yes. Do I think there's some conspiracy that, you know, they want the big market team to win? I don't necessarily know that I'd go that far. I don't know. I was always sort of sorry, my throat is going. I was always sort of scared of the Mavs just because they got Luka and Kyrie. Golly.
You're good.
Haven't had to talk this long in a while. And then on top of that, Mavs fans are kind of obnoxious living so close to them. I've got to
go. No. It's one of those things where at the end of the day, I I struggle with the whole foul deal because, you know, I'll see something in slow-mo and it changes the whole perspective of what's going on. I mean, last night, for example, in real time when they're showing the replay of Jay Will, number six, of the ball going, looks like off of him out of bounds.
Yep.
And he immediately runs over and goes, no, you got to review that. Didn't go off of me. And I'm like, well, I mean, dude, the live play shows it definitely went off of you, whatever. And like, that's me being, you know, trying to not be biased. Cause of course it would benefit if I was like, no, I definitely. So then I look at the slow-mo and it's like, oh, it did go off of Derek Jones Jr. And it is straight out of bounds and it should be our ball. And oh, it is our ball coming back from break and sweet. You know, I mean, but it all happened just like that. And, you know, everyone else I was watching the game with, my dad and youngest brother, were both thinking the exact same thing of, it's not our ball. Crap, when they come back from break, why do we even waste this challenge?
Yeah.
They do, and goes for that. But on the other hand, I think that, yes, Luka Doncic is an incredible basketball player. Yep. If either of us could trade days with him, I'm sure we would. We'd trade basketball skills. We'd probably trade our entire lives to switch over. Maybe I'm speaking for myself here a little bit there, here and there, but I think because he is the opponent, right? I mean, I think if it was Anthony Edwards we're playing, who, fingers crossed, this next round is, you know, whoever, we'd also go, ah, well, he does this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's always going to be somebody who is going to be the antagonist. Yeah. And we're always going to be the protagonist our own. But you, as a fellow big basketball watcher, do you see anything in this Mavs series where you're like, hey, you know what? Like, this is kind of out of the ordinary, or... I mean,
I think to me, it's just been so normal. And I think I'm trying so hard to not let this series destroy who Luka is for me. You know, I'm like, man, Luka's so good at basketball. I don't want to hate him. I don't want to. I'm trying my best. You know, like Draymond Green, I'm fine with hating Draymond Green.
Oh, yeah,
I do. You know, that's just it. But, you know, Luka, and if it happens to be Anthony Edwards next round, Anthony Edwards is so freaking good. He does some corny stuff sometimes, but he's so good at basketball. So I'm trying to not hate him. So I think that's kind of the avenue what I'm going. I also at the same time fully understand people who are on Twitter right now saying Luke's flopping, Luke's not actually hurt, things like that. Just because that's sports at the end of the day. That's what this is all about. So yeah, I think maybe it's the journalist in me as to why I'm not so invested in the refs. I'm invested in the games, but I'm not necessarily invested in, you know, how it's being called and things along that nature.
Yeah, I got to say, once I start going, okay, well, he's not injured, or once I start going, oh, he's flopping every possession or all type of stuff, then I kind of start sounding like an '02 Kings fan, where I'm like, we need a whole entire decade plus to figure out exactly what happened in the series. And I can be holding on to my whole thoughts and conspiracies for 10 years and be preaching from the mountains. And if I'm wrong, I'm definitely wrong. And it's almost 100% that I'm going to be wrong. I mean, there's no way that it's going to be, hey, yeah, there was a whole deal and the Tim Donaghy. I mean, it just doesn't happen like that, really. And at least I don't think anymore.
Yeah.
I think all of it's kind of buttoned up enough, I'd say.
Yeah. And at the same time, like, if you're worried about Luka flopping or trying to draw fouls, like, SGA shoots a lot of free throws also. So, like, I think it's just kind of a streak that works both ways. Like I said, it's just kind of how basketball is played these days.
Yeah, well, last night, I believe the Thunder at one point had double or even more than double the amount of foul shots, and we're still down 8 at one point to the Mavericks last night. And hearing that stat, I was like, well, actually, that's really bad. That means that we're barely staying in the game as opposed to we should be in the game, you know, when it comes down to fouls. Well, also want to ask you, though, I think the most fun topic I can Thunder-wise here, and not ask you about, hey, do you think we're going to win the finals and all, you know, type of stuff, because at the end of the day, I know I'm too biased and say no. I think we're going to win the whole thing every year. But with that being said, if you could clone one Thunder player to make four more of them, and that's your starting lineup, you know, just going forward, I'm saying just, you know, maybe just against some Mavs, or if you want to take it the whole way, which player are you choosing?
Yeah, I think we discussed this slightly beforehand. I think I'm going J-Dub, and I understand he didn't have a great game last night. But, you know, I don't know, he's listed at 6'7", 6'8". He's long, he can handle, he can shoot. I think those, you know, you'd like to say SGA, but then he's going to get back down in the post every single possession.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to say SGA, but yeah, I think J-Dub is my way to go. Like, Chet is an option. I just don't know that Chet handles as well, doesn't pass as well. So I think that kind of gets a little sticky. But I think those are the two options that people would argue. And I think I'm going to go to J-Dub just based on he's a little more versatile, I feel like, than Chet.
Yeah, I want to say the MVP guy on our team.
Yeah.
I want to say Jay. But then seeing how much he does help over off of PJ Washington, and then PJ Washington can just apparently just decide one day he wants to make every three he's ever taken in his life. Does make me a little nervous choosing Shea, but I think that's who I would pick if I'm not going to pick Chet. Mm-hmm. And that's just surely off of the fun of watching basketball. I mean, if you're creating a player on NBA 2K, I think we're all creating Wembanyama now. But if we're creating a Thunder player, it's definitely got to be Chet at that point, right?
Yeah. And, you know, he can block, he can shoot. He's a better handler than most people who are 6'1 or 6'2 or whatever, or 7'1 or 7'2 or whatever he is. But yeah, in terms of like this basketball team actually needs to win, I think, you know, you maybe need a little bit more skills than what he's got on the ball. So, yeah, I think I would go J-Dub, but I definitely understand the Chet argument for sure.
All right. Well, I think I'm with you on that one, though. J-Dub as of last night, maybe not, but every other game, yeah, can't pick you apart too much on that. And the defense he plays is incredible, too, especially against other guards and then other kind of bigs as well. I mean, when they Thunder announced the starting lineups, that's always the weirdest deal to me is they announced Shea, of course, at guard. They announced J-Dub, a guy who's 6'7", 6'6", whatever it may be, at a forward.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, isn't Shea the same height? And you've got just everyone's playing all positions now. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's just basketball. It's kind of like, you know, we talked about football defenses earlier and how it's pretty fluid out there. You know, you do need a guy in the NBA who's around 7 foot. But other than that, you know, it's you think back to Cade Cunningham, 6'6", 6'7". He's pretty much a true point guard. Like, that's just kind of who he is. Yeah, that's just kind of where basketball is. Everybody's somewhat Magic Johnson at this point.
It's only a cool thing.
It's beautiful.
Cool thing. All right, well, very, very last question here, just because I thought of it. I know I'm wearing some Nike Dunks. I know you've always got the shoe game on lock, too, with wearing some Jordans and stuff. Do you think now that OU's not in the Big 12, or maybe that has nothing to do with it, that Oklahoma State's the next Jordan brand, or is it another Big 12 school that comes in as Jordan brand? And I want to say I'm forgetting a school that already is a Jordan brand school, like Houston or somebody, but I can't remember of anyone being.
I think Houston is Jordan. I think Houston is Jordan brand. I don't know that it affects OSU too much. I bet it's more of it's just kind of like a national, they're going to pick who they want. It'd probably lean like Colorado right now just because Dion and all the hype that's going on over there. I don't even know I think Colorado's a Nike school, but I don't know that for sure. Would I love for Oklahoma State to become a Jordan school? Absolutely. I've taken a step back in my shoe buyings because of A, my bank account, and then B, my wife pretty much picks out what I wear every day. So, but I would love for Oklahoma State to become a Jordan school just because, you know, the orange on all the, I need that.
I do too. There's quite a few different colorways of Jordans that'd be great to have an OSU, you know, player exclusive or just see, but also I do think it's now time where, okay, every single conference should have at least one Jordan school, maybe not the Pac-2, but with that being said, I just think it adds just more excitement. I mean, that's all we're really after at the end of the day, right? If that makes a player who lives in New Jersey and has never heard of Oklahoma State all of a sudden go, wait, who? And then all of a sudden we're reaching out with a Jordan logo on. It's like, all right, well, cool. Maybe I'll go play golf for them or tennis or football or basketball or, I mean, who knows? I mean, the other day I learned Arizona State has hockey. So, you know.
Yeah. I think that the Nike partnership has been very good for, we talked about the smaller school or smaller sports earlier. I remember asking Dave Smith a couple of years ago how important the Nike deal was for track. And he said that they got some high level recruit in that literally whenever she, you know, got all these offers, she was looking at all the list and she just cut off any school who wasn't a Nike school because, you know, in track and field and cross country and things like that, like the shoes you're wearing are a ginormous deal. And obviously Nike and Jordan are two branches of the same company really, but I'm much rather it be Nike than Under Armour. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, you know, talking earlier about how some of my family's UCLA fans and the whole Under Armour deal they had going on, I was like, can I not buy one UCLA jersey that's the same color year over year, made by the same company with the same branding, same everything, and I just couldn't figure it out. So that was one of the more bizarre things. But yeah, I am I'm happy we're a Nike school, I'll say it that way. Nike or Adidas.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, either way, but definitely happy it's Nike at this point.
Could be worse. Would I love for it to be Jordan? Sure. But could definitely be a lot worse.
All right. Well, Marshall, I know everyone's already found you. Because at this point, if you're listening to Oklahoma State Podcast and you have not heard of Marshall Scott, then I don't know what you're doing to piss this fire. But where can everyone find you in case they haven't?
So Twitter is at Marshall Scott OK. The Pistols one is at Pistol Skies. Facebook, I imagine you just type in Pistols Firing. I don't use Facebook very well. and then pistolsfiringblog.com. And yeah, thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Hey, of course, thanks so much for joining, and glad to do an in-person interview, you know, with since 2020, that doesn't happen all that often, and definitely glad to be back in Stillwater and have you on. So thanks so much.
Yeah, appreciate it, man.
Welcome here to the latest episode of the CGA Tour. With part two of the podcast here, I've got Walter Agnich joining me, fellow Bedlam Brother creator, fellow avid sports fan, and fellow Class and SAS alum. How's it going, Walt?
Calvin, thank you for having me back, man. You're big time now, way past those Bedlam Brother days. I'm just watching, so proud. You're killing it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for allowing me back. I know I've been on at least a one-year suspension. I'm glad to have had that suspension lifted from your show, and I look forward to getting suspended again.
Yeah, what was the suspension for? Because I've completely
forgotten. I don't know. I think we were at Zev's house.
Okay.
And it may involve tequila. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
best and worst of times. That's why I don't remember.
I'm glad you had me on so I can go over the weather today live so people can be warned. I know the three big guys do a pretty good job, but I think I do better myself. So it looks like currently for the listeners or the viewers, I'm seeing some weather in, Cheyenne. Is that a town?
That is a town. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Well, if you're in Cheyenne, you know, be weather aware.
But yeah.
Because it's live right now, right, Cal? We're live.
Yeah. Okay. We're definitely not recording this at all on Monday.
Yeah. Tologa looks like it could be heading your way as well.
I'm glad everyone gets the weather update. You know, because whenever I have Jake on, I do how's it going? He goes, yeah, good. It's kind of sunny, whatever. And I'm like, I don't think I even asked you about the weather, but good to know that you live in San Diego. You know, I mean, he throws it in. So it's the polite, like, you didn't ask me about the weather, but I know you want to know.
Is that where Jake's at? Is in San Diego? I thought he had moved.
He's actually moving this summer to Seattle.
Oh, okay. See, that's where the weather updates turn from great, no mosquitoes, 75 degree weather to it's raining and it's been raining. And there's
for every day.
I haven't seen the sun in 7 days, and there's bomb sniffing dogs all over downtown, and the shops all close at 7 o'clock, and I can't see the sun.
Well, the other thing here is that you don't have the fascination and the excitement of Oklahoma weather either. You don't have hey, we could have an earthquake, we could have a tornado, we could have a hailstorm, we could have snow, and we could also have it be over 100 degrees, all like in the same year. Yeah.
Did you get that in Detroit ever, Calvin? You just got snow.
Never got it. Yeah, just got snow. It was lame.
Yeah. And you know, in Seattle, you can't even wear your Thunder gear.
Jake's from Atlanta, and he's not really. In Seattle, if you and I are going to Seattle, we're. Yeah.
Well, my job has banned me. I cannot wear Thunder gear in Seattle. They're worried that I'll get into a fight, which I probably would.
You might, yeah. I mean, are you going to Seattle this week for work?
No. That'd be good though. Seattle's in a couple months.
Okay. So. Well, when the Thunder win the chip, I think the Seattle fans then will respect it. You know, I mean, when the Thunder win the whole NBA Finals, the youngest team ever to win a playoff series, they will just be the youngest team to ever win the finals and to be in the finals. I think then Seattle fans might go, okay, well, you know what? He's got to truly be a fan. He's truly got to be a fan.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's just nice that we can be friends again now that OU, OSU, different conferences, you know, we can cheer for each other now, right?
Oh, yeah. But do you want to talk about Bedlam softball from this past weekend?
No, unless you want to talk about
Sunday's
game.
This is really the only time I've ever wanted to talk Bedlam softball with anyone ever.
I mean, we can talk about Sunday's game, but not Friday. So, you know, Friday, Saturday, the weather, you know, they've had a long week.
They were at home.
Yeah.
They didn't have
Sunday
to go on the road
real,
and sleep in hotel beds and stuff. Yeah.
So Sunday's a real good, you know, actual snapshot of how that series should have been. So yeah. OU won it. So how about that?
I mean, you know, it's the details, right? Like, you know, everything's in the details there. And I think we were the ones who brought the Bedlam Trophy back to Stillwater. I don't think you kept it.
Can I have at least a third of it since I won one of the games?
I don't think that's how it works, because when like basketball wins or loses, I don't know what they do. I think they just take it to the last one who won.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're working out on like tokens of the trophy.
So is this the official last Bedlam series of Big 12? I mean, I know the softball team's going to play each other next year. Did the baseball team do their Bedlam series yet, or have they not?
They already did their series.
Okay. Who won that shout one? Out,
well, gosh, I believe OSU won it. It was in Stillwater this year, I do know. But I would say shout out to the OU baseball team. I don't want to give shout outs to them, but they are leading.
We can do it now. See, I can cheer. See Gavin Freeman going to Oklahoma State. I'm happy for the guy. I think he will do really well.
Well, Walter, I mean, the real reason why I wanted to have you on the roster or on the podcast here is just
back to
talk about Oklahoma sports.
I'll get it.
Oklahoma, like the state of Oklahoma sports fandom, right? Like, so now Oklahoma State's in the other conference. Are you going to go, crap, yeah, they actually look kind of good? Or are you going to be like, ah, cool, Calvin's happy? Because, like, I think I'm in that later boat where I'm like, hey, if we play each other, you suck. Like, everyone, like, if you're playing me, if you're playing my favorite team, you suck. Like, I'm never rooting for the other team against my team. Like, that's just not happening. But with that being said, are you kind of like, hey, you know what? Like, if OSU wins, I know Calvin's happy. You know a friend or, you know, family member or whatever.
Not just you, but, you know, other OSU fans. You know, I'll be cheering for OSU, and I kind of had already. But now that we're there should be no reason that Oklahoma State should not be in the top five of the Big 12 football conference every year and competing for the Big 12 title. At least that's what I think. And that leads to a guaranteed spot in the playoffs. I think this is, you know, working out really, really well for Oklahoma State. Getting a conference with that's not the, you know, the Pac-10 that went away. That's not the ACC, which may go away with Florida State and Clemson suing the ACC. I think Oklahoma State's in a great position to really be able to compete, at least in football. You know, all those other sports, they seem to be doing just fine in regardless of what conference they're in for the next, you know, 10 or so years for sure until there's another conference realignment.
Yeah, well, what do you think about them in at least in basketball? Because I think now that's the deal is the Big 12 is going to be a basketball conference. And I know what happened this offseason, got a new coach, all type of stuff, et cetera. But do you think really at the end of the day, do you think you either have to be a basketball or a football school? Can you really do both at the same time?
Calvin, basketball, college basketball is on fire right now, and not in a good way. I don't understand it. I don't know why players are leaving schools and they're going to schools that are either just a little bit smaller or the exact same. I mean, how many Duke, for example, lost, I don't know how many starters. They lost Jeremy Roach, who went from Duke to Baylor. He was going to be a starter next year at Duke. Does it really matter? Like, why leave? Is it just for that extra couple of bucks? But I think that's the world we live in where it's college basketball. It's going to be year to year unless you're Kansas or Kentucky or maybe North Carolina or one of those big power schools that'll keep their players multiple years. But to me, OSU is in the same boat as OU and as all the other schools that after 1 year, you're going to probably lose six guys to the portal for basketball. And I don't know how to explain it. I think it's money related, but why would you go from one school to the other when you were going to start at both and both are, you know, what we would consider the same tier of school? It has to be money, right?
That's the only thing I can think of, because like if you're, for example, what was the OU's football player's name who is transferring to Oklahoma State?
Gavin Freeman.
Yeah, so like he has like 22 catches or so over two seasons. Yeah. Granted, for OU to be playing a freshman enough where he's got catches in a season is kind of crazy. So he must be halfway decent is what I'm getting at. I'm not trying to say he's bad at any means. Yeah. But like for him transferring, I can't think he's transferring for NIL. But when you talk about this guy going from Duke to Baylor, I mean, I just don't know why.
Yeah.
Why else?
Football, I think, is okay right now. Players are going to be staying for the most part unless they can't carve out a role. The Spencer Sanders thing, which I still, you know, don't really understand. But, hey, shout out to Spence. I saw he's at the Chiefs rookie minicamp. Or do we hate him? I think we love him. I love him. I thought he was a good quarterback.
Wait, but what do you mean the Spencer Sanders thing? Like, you understand it. You're saying, like,
I don't know why he left. Why did he leave Oklahoma State to be a backup at Ole Miss?
So, the rumors, not confirmed by any sources, but the rumors are he left with the idea that that Jackson Dart was going to transfer and or go to the NFL. Then he transferred, and he was also going to complete his degree. But really, at the end of the day, he was just basically being able to play SEC football as quarterback number one, see what he could do with Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. And I mean, like, Ole Miss, I want to say, like, wins, like, on average, 8-plus games a year now, easily, with Lane Kiffin. And always knocks somebody off every year, it seems, too. So that was the idea. And then he left, tried to get other players to join him. They didn't. Then the door was open for him to come back to Oklahoma State, but he had already tried to get guys to leave. So then the door was shut coming back to Oklahoma State.
It's a too proud moment. He couldn't come back. It's too proud. But you get my point. These are handfuls of very rare situations in football versus basketball. It seems to happen to every school.
Well, actually, the whole Spencer Sanders story, as I remember it more and more, he was initially going to transfer to Auburn, be the starter, but they did not have, they could not accept him because he had not passed enough classes towards his degree. Now, he had been in college for 5 years at this time. I think this was his sixth year. So
that's, I remember that. Kind of
crazy. Yeah. And then basically OSU said, no, we're not taking you back. We're moving on.
Because he was recruiting other players off.
And they said, oh, good riddance. And then, then he went to Ole Miss, which is basically a school that would offer him something. I mean, like, I think he was QB2 or 3. So, anyways.
But, that and then, the OU offensive lineman, Caden Green, going to Missouri. Clearly, maybe homesick, maybe money's related. But those are only a couple of, handfuls of things, of problems in football versus in college basketball. And, it's just exclusive to men's. They're setting records in women's college basketball thanks to Caitlin Clark, thanks to Angel Reese, thanks to Cameron Blink. I mean, I watched more of the women's tournament than I did of the men's tournament. And I think for the most part, it's because they're developing, storylines and staying at their school for three to four years. I mean, it was even better when it was the one and done for men's college basketball. At least they stayed that 1 year. They went to the draft. They were drafted. Now they're there for 1 year and then maybe going to another school, maybe going to G League, maybe going to the Australian. It's just, it's lacking story for me.
I'm curious what it'll be like in 10 years. Like 10 years, the transfer portal opens the way it does, what then we'll be saying? Because I think then there'll be a calm down. There'll be – everything will kind of just regress on all the excitement, transfer portal, NIL money, just flying all over, et cetera. You won't have the John Calipari going to Arkansas, I don't think, in 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, I could be totally wrong. But basically now – the guys who might have been worried about being boosters for somewhere because they are the owner of Tyson or whatever now are like, well, it's legal. Heck yeah, let's throw it all in.
Yeah.
Don't
forget Jerry Jones too there.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, his alma
mater. Nope, there's Millie.
I got to say, there's just some like odd deal there about why in the world would you transfer schools if you're like, hey, you know what? I don't have a chance to start. But then again, you transfer schools when you think it's going to work out better. I just want to see it like 10 years time. Hey, what does the whole NIL deal look like now? Like, has this fizzled out? Has this actually worked out? Are these players who are massively transferring out of schools doing something? And the like fourth reason or whatever I want to say at this point is, Once all these guys are done with like their sixth and seventh years of college, right? Like Alan Bowman due to COVID, medical, et cetera. And you kind of have the whole COVID waiver done with of all the players who could be part of that. And it really is when you can only be in college for like 6 years. Then I want to see like, okay, does this calm down at all? Now that there's kind of like a defining rule. Whereas right now it just seems like it's Wild West completely.
Yeah, agree. And again, I still think college football is, I know a lot of people disagree with that, think college football is not, but I think college football is miles ahead of college basketball in terms of how many players are entering the portal and leaving. Anyways, did you get to hear Millie there? She gave a take about Arkansas. No.
Oh yeah. Millie. Yeah. Just a little bit.
I know everyone misses my dogs. I know that's the thing. So she said hi.
Yeah, of course.
She's barking at the weather.
Oh yeah.
She's saying Fairview needs to watch the weather. That's what she said. Fairview.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Out by the Gloss Mountains. Very familiar. There's one question I want to ask you, though. OU's first year in the SEC.
Right.
Versus Oklahoma State's first year without OU and Texas in the Big 12. Who do you think better versus expectations? Because if I just say better, I think it's Oklahoma State, but they do play in a different conference. But better versus expectations, what do you think?
Oklahoma State next year should be competing for a playoff spot. I mean, it's that is expectation, right? I mean, I like Oklahoma State's chances. I don't think Colorado's as serious as other people think. I think they're going to follow up the same season that they did this year. You know, Arizona, great team, just lost their coach. You know, who else are you looking at in this conference? So I would probably
Utah.
I guess you always K-State's always the trouble team, but K-State always seems to lose two or three games to other people, so it kind of knocks them out. And it, you know, this year it doesn't matter; just win your conference and you're into the playoffs. And so you can afford to have that. Now, OU, on the other hand, you know, they got this big transfer out of TCU, Williams from that's a defensive tackle. That was one of the things that we were lacking. The other thing OU was lacking is offensive line help. They got the center out of SMU, of course, took the big hit from Caden Green. But this OU defense, I think, is probably going to compete for a top 15 spot in the country. But you've got such a tough schedule. You have Alabama, you have Texas, you have Tennessee, you have, I don't really want to say it, Missouri, but you got Missouri. You've got Ole Miss. It's just such a brutal first-year schedule. But again, OU may be able to get in with three losses. So I would say that I would have more optimism for OSU's chances to make the playoffs than OU's. But I really think this is the year that Brent turns it around and has a top 15 defense and is competing in the SEC and will be enough to turn it around to have another great recruiting class and to really have it focused for the following year, competing for a national championship.
Wow. Well, from what you said, I think there's way more room for error Oklahoma State-wise. Whereas if OU knocks off two of three of the teams you mentioned, or Alabama, if OU beats Alabama next year, they're going to a bowl game, I would think. And it's, hey, this is a rebuilding year, but we beat Alabama. You know, we had whatever quarterback we're on now that goes to the Heisman Trophy ceremony. I mean, Dylan Gabriel's not going to be far off. Now, do think it's already transferred out, but is that because Jackson Arnold's that good? Or is that because Gabriel said, hey, I can go get an Heisman Trophy discussion and put up some crazy good stats because we're not playing the SEC
right
over in Oregon? So, yeah, I just think there's a lot more room for Oklahoma State to have letdown versus OU. It's like, hey, if we do good in our first year in the SEC, good. We don't have to do great. This is not like a team that we're going national championship or bust. So the expectations are just not
sure.
Not there. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, well, you know, I can kind of be, you know, letting your hair down, be free flowing there and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And the offense for OU is the one to tell. Jackson Arnold, it was two sides to his game against Arizona. I know it's the bowl game. It's hard to take much from it. But he had moments where he played really well, and then he had moments in that game where it looked like the offensive line couldn't block for him at all. And it looks like that problem may still be there. So is he going to be able to be, you know, getting his passes out there? Is he going to be under pressure a lot? We know the wide receiver core at OU is really, really deep. They brought in Deion Burks from Purdue. They had Jaden Gibson. They have Nick Anderson. They have Andrell Anthony coming back. You know, there's a reason why Gavin Freeman left. It's that wide receiver group is very, very deep. So as long as Arnold has time, I think the offense is going to be able to get by. And the defense, I'm looking forward to seeing it because with the addition of Williams from TCU, I really think that they're going to be able to hold the fort down and really limit teams to being able to score.
All right. Well, I'll believe when I see it, but I don't think you're wrong necessarily. OU always brings in high recruits, and also Venables is a really well-known defensive guy.
So. Hey, look at that. You know, this time last year, you were just screaming F-bombs at me because we hated each other. And look at this. We're saying OSU to the playoffs. We're saying OU is going to have a good year. I mean, come on.
We're
family again now.
But we're also well known here of going, if OU makes the cultural playoffs, that's quite an achievement. Where if Oklahoma State doesn't, it's a rough year. I mean, what's a 12-team playoff this year?
Right.
So Oklahoma State's not one of the top 12 teams in the country, and they're, I mean, if they're not top 12, that basically means they're third best in the Big 12 is the best they could be, but did not be top 12. So that's tough. That's tough. Well,
UCO. Like, let's get UCO into the Big 12, and then we may become enemies again.
If UCO joins the Big 12, we're enemies, period, if we're still
yeah,
the Big
we
12
are.
When UCO
we are.
Joins.
I mean, no, not
I mean, no, I mean, not because you went to UCO and I went to OSU. I just give you a hard time about that. No, it's because then the Big 12 would be on it. Maybe when we're 60. I mean, UCO has a ways to go is my point. If this happens in the next 10 years, then like I'm pretty sad.
We are closer than you think. That's very disrespectful of you to say about my beloved alma mater.
Are you guys NAIA?
Hooves up. I don't know what we are. But
okay,
we have.
So you don't know
we
what
have
you
a,
are, but
we have a
like,
benefit. We have a Boone Pickens, okay? We have a Boone Pickens.
Who?
It's Paycom, Chad Richardson. Just named a stadium after him. So guess what? We're gonna buy ourselves a program.
Well, Chad, keep it going. We'd love to have another D1 program in the state, but until we do, I'll believe when I see it. I do want to get you out of here on this one though. Thunder, Mavs. Series hasn't started yet. Starts Tuesday night. This used to be a huge Thunder podcast. It's now basically an Oklahoma State podcast here. No. But Walter, with that being said, Thunder, Mavs. Who you got? How many games?
Give me the Thunder in five.
A gentleman sweep. All right.
I just, I think we match up so well against them. Doncic and Lou, and then if you have run into problems with Kyrie, I think Case and Wallace is just an outstanding defender. Plus Hardaway, he's coming back. We don't know exactly what strength he's at. And Kleber is going to be out the entire series. The way that it seems that the Mavericks were able to kind of dominate the Clippers with those bigs and having, Kyrie get to the hole, I just don't think that's going to work against us. I think we'll be able to stop it. And if we're not, it's going to be like Valanciunas, where on our side, when we're on offense, we're going to spread the court and be able to get to the rim really easy. So I just don't think it's a good matchup for the Mavericks. And I think the Thunder are going to take it in five.
In five. I mean, that's – hey, I'll take that every single day of the week.
Yeah.
But I got to say – Max Kleber was shooting 34.8% for the second year in a row for the Mavs this year from three. But in the playoffs, he was just going off. He had point totals of four. I mean, he got injured in that game, but 15, 3, 3, and 6. And then he had three before. So point being here is that I don't think that's that – like the fact that they lost Kleber, it's not that big of a difference. I've listened to multiple podcasts by NBA guys going after game five going, wow, Maxi Kleber is going 5 of 7 from three, then you really have an issue. Well, yeah, the Clippers did, but that's for one game. The rest of it, he was literally like 100% from the floor or 2 of 4 from the floor games they played in. And we're not, I mean, it's not that big of a drop off, I'd say. Like, I don't know if he played just great defense. We matched really well against Chet or Giddy or whoever, but I just got to think that basically the Thunder will try to wear them out. Wear out there just playmakers, see what we can do.
Yeah, agreed. And, I think it might be a good idea for me to get on the road now with this weather going on to go to the park to see if I can find some hidden tickets. Do you think they hid the tickets already, or you think they're waiting till tomorrow?
I'm going to guess they're waiting till tomorrow because the Thunder have been doing a great, great great job about giving out like a bunch of apparel and other opportunities for fans to go to games, all stuff during the playoffs. They ran out of like 250 shirts they were giving out this morning, and they started giving them out at 10 a.m. and it was first come, first serve. They ran out of those in like 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
Like that's crazy. People just were like, oh, work downtown. They're just like, hey, I'll be back in a minute. I mean, just that many people that quickly.
I'm going to go to the park and I'll tweet at the Thunder if there's storms on the way. Hey, I don't care. I'm waiting to see where you hide the tickets. Do you think they'll do it?
You should. You should kind of be like the person who doesn't want the tree cut down, right? I think you should just go.
Yep.
Thunder, I'm standing on the stage until I get tickets for tomorrow night's game. If a tornado takes me out, it's on you. I think that's where you kind of should land it. Just be crazy, be outlandish, be crazy. Wild.
Hopefully, I can see Thunder Jesus out there. Maybe he's out there, rising from the first playoff series. Oh, that's so sacrilegious. Oh my gosh. You're going to ban me again. Have you not met Thunder Jesus? I got to meet him last game.
No.
What? Oh, dude. I know you're an OSU pod now, which is where you follow. I get it. The numbers. You got to look up Thunder Jesus. There's a guy, he dresses up as Jesus. He looks like Jesus, and he goes to all the games behind the goal. His name's Thunder.
I know, like Brickman or something.
No. Yeah, he's new. He's not Brickman. We have Thunder Jesus.
Do you know Thunder Jesus is also a song name? As I try to look this up here.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'll have to tell Thunder Jesus next time I see him.
Yeah, you got to tell him to really try to start a stuff.
Super nice guy.
TV more because he is not one of the first 20 Google searches. He is not on the first page.
Oh gosh, yeah. I'll have to send you videos. He's made people miss free throws. He has done it. He's turned that ball into food and wine. He's done it. I've seen him. They've done like it where they've parted the sea and it's just him and he goes like this and I'm moving my arms for the people that can't see. And the gust comes into the arena and it takes the ball and puts it 20 yards the other way. Let's go Thunder Jesus. Yeah.
The Thunder are weirdly known to have basically prayers for every single game. And I have not gone.
They should have Thunder Jesus do the prayer. They should have Thunder Jesus do the prayer.
As long as he's about it, they should, yeah.
But wait, Oklahoma City is the only team that does a prayer before the game?
I don't know of any other team that does a prayer before the game or an invocation. And Thunder Jesus on Facebook is not who we're looking for, just to be clear.
Yeah.
He does live in Oklahoma City, but I don't
think I can't believe you don't know Thunder Jesus. It's been a long day for me, Calvin. I feel like I've given you low energy. I'm super excited that my suspension has been lifted, but I can't believe you don't know who Thunder Jesus is.
Well, we'll have to keep the suspension lifted here so we can learn more about Thunder Jesus in the next episode.
But
right?
But next week, we'll do it again Monday. Where's the camera? There it is. Because guess where I will be next Monday? And I'll give you a hint. It will not be in Dallas. It will not be in Vegas. And it will not be in Oklahoma City.
Boston.
No, that's a good guess. I was in.
You did tell me this on Saturday.
It is an NBA playoff game. We'll be there.
Okay, wait.
I will be an Indy. I will give you a rundown of all of the things Pacers-wise. I'll let you know if they have a Pacer team.
Let me know. You didn't get tickets. I wonder how cheap it is.
I don't know. There's a massive convention that's going to be there, so it's going to be the candy people and the NBA fans, and they're going to go at it. I just know it.
All the sugar highs.
All the sugar highs. That's right.
I can't wait. That'll be awesome. All right. Well, with that being said, thanks so much for joining us for the latest episode of the TJ Tour podcast. If you have not already, subscribe to the TJ Tour on YouTube. There's over 200 subscribers right now. I think that count is up 196. So
get it.
Where that close. Might have to look at by the time this video comes out. So if it does, we're on the track to grab it. Whatever's next. Keep going. So, that being said, Walter, thanks for joining here, and we'll catch you guys soon.